When most people think about communication, they think about words. They think about how many words a child can say, how clearly they can say them, or whether they are talking on time. But communication is so much bigger than speech. For many children, especially those on the autism spectrum, communication may show up in gestures, behavior, facial expressions, play, visuals, or even in frustration when they are struggling to be understood. So what does real progress actually look like? How can parents tell the difference between a speech delay, a broader communication concern, or signs that it may be time to seek support? And how do we create more understanding, less stigma, and better outcomes for children and families? Today on Vital Voices, we are going beyond words.
Vital Voices is a production of Tag Studios and is proudly brought to you each week by our sponsor, Wellspring Lifestyle Group, where you can find freedom and transformation through whole person health.
Vital Voices.
Welcome to Vital Voices, the podcast where we amplify the stories, insights, and expertise of the people shaping the future of our communities, our conversations, and our country. I'm your host, Alexis Burrows. Thank you for joining us. Today, we're discussing a topic that touches many families, educators, and caregivers, but it is still often misunderstood: autism, communication, and what meaningful progress really looks like. Joining us is Dr. Danielle Moss, a speech-language pathologist with Keystone Therapy Services, a speech-language service provider based in New Providence. Keystone Therapy Services offers support to individuals of all ages and has a strong pediatric focus, including work in language impairments, autism spectrum disorder, speech sound disorders, early intervention, and intensive therapy services. The practice also offers teletherapy and services that help coordinate therapy goals among caregivers, therapists, and schools. So in this episode, we'll explore autism awareness through the lens of communication, talk about general speech and language delays, discuss when it may be time to see a speech-language pathologist, and challenge some of the assumptions people often make about what progress should look like. Welcome to Vital Voices, Dr. Moss.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Awesome. So what I didn't mention in our open is that April is also Autism Awareness Month, so it's an awesome time to have this conversation. And I think it's always good to kind of start at the ground floor. So for people who may not be familiar, they can kind of get an understanding of, you know, where the conversation is even rooted before we go, you know, a little bit deeper into the weeds. So how do you explain autism to parents and caregivers in a simple and approachable way?
Mm-hmm. Well, I usually tell them, you know, the name. So it's autism spectrum disorder. Mm-hmm. It's a neurodevelopmental difference. And it can really result in a wide variety of different levels of disability for every person. I tell them that the prevalence or how often it may come up in the world is more often than you think. So right now, the prevalence in the United States is 1 in 31 children, right? So it can vary based on states. For in the U.S., it can vary for us in terms of islands, right? Mm-hmm. I usually tell parents that it's a difference in how a child experiences and interacts with the world. It usually shows up in the way they communicate, connect with others, and process information. It's diagnosed based on observable behavior. So basically what you see. Mm-hmm. So how a child might interact with someone. So you might find, not that this is unique to autism, but you might find that a child on the spectrum might prefer their own company. They like to play by themselves. So there's some social differences there. There's also some specific interests there. So you might find some people on the spectrum really like things like cars or Legos, or like Thomas the Train can have really specific, or we call them restricted interests as well. Mm-hmm. I also tell parents that one person with autism, if you meet one person, it's literally just one person. There's so much diversity in terms of what it could look like for your child. And so, you know, we all are unique people. Every child is unique. So it does look different. And it's also something that doesn't need to be fixed, but really understood so that you can better support your child and their development and to help them reach the goals that you want them to.
Yeah, I think it's important for people to remember that just like any other group of people, it's not a monolith, right? You have mm-hmm. a lot of different ways that, and then it's a spectrum as well. And I think when you consider that word, then that means you're understanding that there's a lot of different places on that spectrum that people can fall. And therefore, you know, it's not, you're not necessarily going to have the exact same presentation in every person that may have autism or be on the spectrum. And I think because sometimes people can look at it like a monolith, there are still some misconceptions that people have. So what are some of those, like the most common ones that you come across in your practice that people have about autism?
They might think that that means that a child can't talk, that they can't interact with people, that they can only focus like line things up, like they're just very rigid, that they have crazy outbursts, kind of just like, I don't want to say like all the worst behaviors, but just basically like all of the things that you might see in severe cases, just all combined in one. Don't know that, you know, you can have autism and have a wonderful full life. You can still get married. You can still go to college. There are many people in the world that are on the spectrum that, you know, do really well. I would say that's the biggest misconception. It's kind of like they hear autism and it's like the world is ending. Like there's no hope, but that's not what it means at all.
Fair enough. You know, you work in a very interesting part of the space as a speech language pathologist. And obviously communication becomes a very important part of the conversation for you in your work. But overall, why is communication such an important part of the autism conversation?
It's really important because we find that because the brain is just a little bit different. So we said that autism is a neurodevelopmental difference. Communication is impacted. And so you might find someone on the spectrum, specifically a young child, like they may be able to say, they might be able to say like daddy, mummy, cookie, water, fridge. They might be able to say all these words. But if they want something, they may not even use their words. They might still come to you and pull your hand to lead you to what they want.
Right.
So communication can really be impacted. It's just a difference. And so that's why it comes up a lot. It impacts, you know, how you express wants and needs, how you communicate, happy or sad. A lot of children, not all, because autism can occur separate from a language delay, but a lot of them also have a language delay. And so you also find that, I would say more common that children on the spectrum aren't talking like around two. You might find that they're not saying any words. So that's why we talk about it.
Okay. So, you know, there's a lot of words that get jumbled into the conversation when you start to talk about communication. You know, can you kind of break down the difference between speech versus language versus communication, and how those fit into the conversation around autism, and how, you know, people on the spectrum communicate?
Sure. So speech is the physical aspect or act of producing sounds or the way we say things. So like if someone has an accent, we would say that's their speech. Language has to do with the system of how we combine those words, how we construct sentences, how we create thoughts. And then communication is a broader concept. It includes all of that together. So speech, language, gestures, behavior, facial expressions. And so, you know, communication is, it's how humans connect. You know, we connect verbally in speech, written words. We also connect non-verbally through actions and facial expressions. It's how we build relationships. It's how we engage in the world. And so, you know, it is important to learn the differences, but I think it keeps on coming up because when communication is impacted, it impacts learning, it impacts social development, like how you interact with your family and school. And it's really central because it's literally the essence of who we are as humans.
And that's the thing. You know, you spoke into even just like the gestures part of it, right? Like there's a lot of different ways that we communicate. So even if you have like a really bad sore throat and you can't get words out, you know, you might have to WhatsApp somebody who's in the same space as you to say, hey, you know, I need a glass of water, or, you know, things along those lines, because you have that difficulty in communication. And so it's kind of, it's in that same space of understanding how all of these different things play together. You know, obviously your work centers a lot in the pediatric space. I know you offer services broad strokes, but especially for families when you're talking about a younger person dealing with, you know, maybe speech or communication challenges that come up because of being on the spectrum, you know, why is it so important for families then to understand that communication is about more than just spoken words?
That's really good, because I find that when I meet with families for the first time, it's expressed like he talks, he's saying words, he's saying things, but like he's not having a conversation. Mm-hmm. And that's because it is more than just words. Words in and of themselves, I mean, you have to string them together. You have to do something with them. So you can say cookie all day, but if you're not saying it in intent with saying like, I'm showing you what a cookie is, or I want the cookie, or, you know, look, that cookie is so cool. I love this cookie, you know, that's why it's so important. And the words are important, don't get me wrong, but it's putting it together. And we've been talking a lot about verbal words, and you pointed something out when you're talking about like writing something down. There are other ways to communicate. So some of our individuals on the spectrum may not speak. We don't know why that is. There could be different reasons why someone doesn't speak just in general outside of autism. Like if someone has a stroke or if they have some brain injury or something like that, they may not be able to talk. So there are other ways to communicate. One way is called augmentative and alternative communication, AAC. Mm-hmm. And with AAC, you can use symbols to communicate a message. So we have different levels, I guess you can call it, something called like low tech, where you could actually write something down and point to it. That's what we call low tech. Technology is not necessary. Mm-hmm. Something called like a switch, where you can kind of put a picture and you press a button and then it'll say something. Or you can have more fancy technology where you can type something and press a button and it speaks for you. Or you can press a button that has a message and a picture. So you can have a picture that says like, hello, my name is Danielle. And I press that button and it'll say it for me.
Right.
So yeah, it's more than words for sure. Mm-hmm. That ties in with communication, conversation. But when you, like I said earlier, when you focus just on the words, the whole communication thing is lost, because words mean things. You know, there's a saying where it's like words mean things, because sometimes, you know, as humans, we can just say things and forget that they have messages. Mm-hmm. But in isolation, the message is lost sometimes. So we need context, we need intent. And so that's why it's so important to look at a child and as a human, as a whole person, you know, what are you trying to communicate? Are you trying to tell me something? Are you trying to show me something?
Yeah.
Are you trying to get my attention? Are you saying yes? Are you saying no? It's more than just words.
Yeah. And I think we have to appreciate too that, you know, because I think sometimes we can, I think broad strokes, we can be selfish people. So when we think about sometimes the difficulty that happens with communication, we think about it selfishly from our end of the conversation or the communication, saying, well, it's frustrating for me because I don't know what you're trying to say. But then imagine how much more frustrating it is for the person on the other side. Like there's still, you know, ways that you are able to quickly and easily communicate all of these things, but they may have a difficulty or a challenge. And so it's important to be, you know, mindful that there's a person involved in this process of communication that is, you know, having difficulty, that is having challenges, and it's just as frustrating for them as you may feel like it is for you, if not more so. And we have to then, you know, you have to treat people with humanity. I think sometimes, you know, it's easy to get lost and miss out on the humanity of how you manage and how you engage with people, just because it's like, well, I just wish this was easier. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you started to talk about communication beyond words. You know, what are some of the ways that children may be communicating? Because sometimes I think, you know, there's so much out there. There's, you know, WebMD and Google this and AI that, and people tend to, you know, they go looking. I'm like, you know, my kid isn't saying this yet, or they're not saying that, or I don't think they're communicating fully. But, you know, how do you help someone to say, you know, what are some of the ways that their children may be communicating with them, even if they're not necessarily speaking words yet?
Yes. I wanted to add something what you just said just now. That's a, you know, when you're talking about just difficulty communicating, I just wanted to add that, you know, there's levels to it. As adults, we can get so frustrated with each other, you know, and that's not with a delay. That's not, we're not talking about a child. We're talking about full grown adults where everything is developed. And sometimes it can be incredibly frustrating. Sometimes, you know, you might be talking to someone, you're like, why am I like this? And I'm like, oh, wait, I'm hungry, or I'm tired, or I'm hangry. Yes. You know, like sometimes you have to really check in with yourself. And that's us with, you know, years of experience living on this earth. So then if you take to a child, just a child, we're not talking about a delay, you know, there has to be compassion and understanding there. Yes. And when you take it even further with a child with a delay, you know, I've had families come in and they want, and I'm not trying to discredit these desires because they're important for living, but like expressing that they're hungry or they're tired or they need to use the bathroom. It's like, if you really sit down and think about how complex that is, we take it for granted because, you know, we develop normally. Like those are incredibly hard things to communicate. And so, you know, as we talk about this, compassion is just such a huge thing that we just have to remember. And I say it with consideration because also sometimes we have families who they have a lot going on. We talk about spectrum. We have children with lesser support needs, and we have children who need a lot of support. We have families who have adults, you know, that they're still taking care of. And so, you know, compassion is required for everybody on all levels. I just wanted to share that. But you were asking about just in terms of communication, you know, I always tell parents it doesn't begin with words and doesn't necessarily end with words. You know, it's that it really starts with action. We're talking about eye contact. We're talking about those gestures. We're talking about shared attention. If you think about a baby, how a baby is communicating as early as a couple of months, that baby's looking in your face and laughing and smiling and giggling and babbling. It starts really, really, really young. Those facial expressions, imitating facial expressions, laughing with mom, you know, having connection during feeding time. It also includes leading an adult by the hand or pointing to a visual device. So it includes so much that we forget that it's not just about those words. It shows up in play. You know, how a child moves towards something, comes to something, pushes something away.
I think, you know, I just want to go back to your point before that. I think if you've ever played the game Pass It On, right? Like, we know just how bad we can, as fully developed adults, like you said, be at communication sometimes. Because
is the same as telephone?
Yes.
Sorry, I just want to make sure I understand.
Yes.
Okay, all right.
Right.
So we're there.
It's the same idea, right? Where someone starts with a message, and by the time you get to the end of five people, that message is completely distorted. And again, this is with grown adults who have decades of communication experience, and we still have that challenge. So even, and I think that just proves your point, that even in those spaces, we should be able to have compassion and understand that if we can't get it right when you and I may be sitting down in a room face to face, having all of the social cues and the intonation changes and all those things, we still have miscommunication. So imagine, like you said, someone who may be having some level of delay or difficulty, what that then looks like. You know, I think one of the things that, and this goes back to your earlier point, that sometimes we focus on what we may think are the more extreme versions of the symptoms that show up. But, you know, behavior also can become a form or a function of communication. How does that work?
You know, behavior tells us exactly what we need to know. Oh, even when a child doesn't have the language to express themselves, you know, a meltdown might tell you, nah, not into this, or pushing something away, or pulling you, or hugging you. It is also communication. I think that when we're dealing with our clients and we're trying to understand behaviors, we function in the thought of it doesn't happen in a vacuum. So we have like a chart where we'll look at, so let's say a child has like, let's say a child comes to therapy and on the way to therapy, we're in the waiting room and we're kind of like sitting down and we're throwing ourselves down and we might not want to come into the therapy room. So we'll look at what happened before the behavior. So did anything happen in the waiting room on the way to the waiting room? What the behavior is exactly, you know, are we hurting ourselves? Are we hitting ourselves? Are we hitting anybody else? Like, what does that behavior look like? And then what was the response? And so it communicates a lot. It just takes a lot of a lot more thought just to kind of figure out the intent. And sometimes it's not that deep, to be honest. Sometimes it's like, oh, they saw their favorite toy in the waiting room and they want the toy.
Right.
But communicating, I want this toy, isn't coming there for a couple of reasons. One, the ability may not be there. Sometimes when you're in the height of emotion, you know this as a human being, sometimes you just can't get the words out. And so kind of just like stopping or throwing yourself down might just be the way. I feel like we see it all the time in the grocery store, right? When you have little ones and they want something and mommy says no, you kind of see it all the time as you're in the grocery store.
Yeah, I think we that's probably one of the best ones, the grocery store or the department store when you're walking past the toy section, right? Things that just grab their attention and it's like, you know, I want this. And, you know, even for kids who can express it, you know, you still will have sometimes those behavioral challenges because like, well, I want this toy or, you know, we just drove past McDonald's and I want fries. You know what I mean? Like things like that where it just it can still come across through that kind of behavior.
I hope you're enjoying this episode of Vital Voices. We're going to take a quick break for some words from our sponsors and we'll be right back.
Have you been searching for healing but still feeling stuck? Maybe it's stress, fatigue, long COVID symptoms, fibroids, high blood pressure, or perhaps a condition no one can fully explain. At Wellspring Lifestyle Group, we believe healing is body, soul, and spirit, with Christ at the center and practical evidence-based steps you can actually follow. Our approach is grounded in faith, backed by science, and fueled by testimony. Start your journey to freedom today with the free Thrive 360 Holistic Wellness Checkup at wellspringlifestylegroup.com. In minutes, you'll get a head start on your journey. Wellspring Lifestyle Group, freedom and transformation through whole person health.
Welcome back to Vital Voices. Let's continue our conversation.
I think one of the important questions that I want to ask too in this vein, you know, we have an 8-year-old, 7 years about to turn 8, and my son is about to turn 3. And when you have kids, you know, there's always these things that you're considering. It's like, okay, you know, are they walking on time? Are they talking on time? You know, and all of these sorts of things. And so that concept of progress becomes an interesting conversation and space for people. So I wanted to ask you, like, why can it be limiting or even misleading to define progress by things like just, you know, how many words a child is saying at a particular age?
I think that as the human race has developed and we've been able to kind of give answers or norms as to how things should happen, you kind of just get lost. So I'm sure you've heard the analogy, like the forest and the trees, right? Sometimes you get lost and you're focusing on the trees and not the forest. And I think that milestones can be one of them. They're definitely set as a guide just to help parents and doctors, because doctors use them too, and I use them too. So if I'm determining if a child has a delay or a disorder or something else, I'm also using guides. They help us. They help kind of keep us all in the straight and narrow. But sometimes we get lost in those things. And so, you know, one norm is like a child must have like 50 words by their one or something like that, one and a half. And the word count, honestly, for me as a therapist, and it might vary because we all have our different styles. The word count doesn't necessarily, it's not a huge concern to me. It's more so of how a child is using those words. Because we have kids who have delays. You can have a delay, which means that things are developing normally, but it's just developing at a slower rate. And then you do have a disorder where things are not happening in the order that you would expect them to. And so those are the things that I look at more so. So if a child, you know, is one and a half and we have like 20 words, we're on our way to 50. Everything else seems okay. We might just be taking a little bit longer to get those words. I'm really focusing on how is that child using those words? Are we using them to communicate a message, or are we just saying them randomly when we see them? Because as humans, as we talked about before, communication is all about connection. We don't, as human beings, we don't exist in a vacuum. We use words to communicate with others, whether it's to share a moment, whether it's to help a need to be met. And so I look a lot at communicative intent. Also, we're looking at the types of words a child is saying. So are you using nouns? Are you using verbs? Are you using pronouns? Are you combining these words? Are you making sentences? So, you know, I think that some families might not seek help because it's like, oh yeah, we have words. We're saying words. But it's really, how are we saying those words? Like that's my biggest concern, honestly, when I see a child, how we're using those words and the function of those words, and are we combining those words? And it shows up later on in academics, you know? So as a child is young, we're just talking about little sentences, but as we get older, we're talking about writing those sentences. You know, we're talking about using proper grammar. We're talking about punctuation and commas, all of it ties in eventually as you age and you grow and develop. I don't want to say the bar keeps on moving, but your expectations just become, it becomes more.
Right.
And so all of it impacts it eventually. And so it's just important to see how a child is using it. And it can be misleading. And again, it's not everything. But I think that we have those check-ins with your pediatrician, and they're really important, and it's so important to be honest. Sometimes families can anticipate the questions and kind of answer in a way that might not get them flagged. And it's just so important to just, you know, be honest about what's happening with yourself as well. I find too that a lot of the times in our society, and I think it's a beautiful thing in that we give individuals time. We'll say like, oh, you know, he was always like that, or, you know, he's just doing this. He just needs a little bit more time. I think that's a beautiful thing in behavior culture. But sometimes we're giving these kids a little bit too much time before we get some help.
Right.
And getting help doesn't necessarily mean seeing a therapist, because if you come to me, like I mentioned at the, like, let's say you're a little over one and your child might be saying 10 words or not what I might expect them to do at that time, I might not say you need therapy. I might say, hey, try these strategies, try this, and let's check in. It doesn't have to get there all of the time. Sometimes it does mean that you need to come to see someone, but it doesn't always mean that. And so it's just so important to get ahead of it. And then the last thing I would say too is I also find that I have a lot of families say, well, I was just like this when I was young. And I kind of just tell families, you know, I don't have a crystal ball. I can't see the future. So I'm happy that, you know, you were able to develop and you were able to do all these things, but I can't predict it for your child. it may be the same story, you know, your child may not need therapy. If you don't do therapy or you don't see an SLP or whoever it may be, your child might be fine. But because we can't predict it and we have tools and knowledge and research where we can address it now, we don't have to wait. It's great to take advantage of those things now.
Yeah. I think it's important to remember that, you know, we are very much products of our environment, right? And so I think sometimes mm-hmm. even when people consider, when you consider personality, right? So it's like you might have a kid who at one has already come to the point where they realize they don't like noise, right? And so they may not say all of the words they know because it's just always so noisy around. I'm just like, I'm not talking in all of this noise. I'm not saying anything. And so I think even just little things like that, like I think there's so much layers and considerations to it. Going back to the question in terms of like why it might be misleading to solely define progress by the amount of words, because there's so many things that may interplay with what they're saying, what they're not saying, and why they may or may not be saying, even because sometimes they have it and they're just not saying it because the environment just to them doesn't feel comfortable to do it in, right? And so I think there's all these different things that people have to consider as well.
You're so right. And another thing too is just like, although I try not to highlight this too much, but it is true, sometimes you do have personality differences.
Right.
We have introversion, extroversion. That actually exists when a child is young. So mm-hmm. you could also have a child who introverted, mm-hmm. Who just needs a little bit more time to do stuff. Mm-hmm. So it is important to look at the whole person.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. You know, on the flip side of that conversation, you know, what are some examples of meaningful progress that families may overlook in the early stages of figuring out, you know, what's happening with their kid?
Yeah, I would say, well, I'll answer this in a therapeutic sense, and you can let me know if this is answering what you're getting at.
Fair.
If a child isn't talking and they start therapy with us, we work on what we call pre-verbal skills. So we're working on turn taking, like during play, if a child is taking turns, we're looking at joint attention, which refers to like looking at an object at the same time as someone. Mm-hmm. We're looking at play skills. Sometimes you'll find that some kids have restricted play. Like they might just not play with things in the ways that we might not expect them to. And not that that's necessarily wrong, but we just like to expand the ways that a child can play. And so meaningful progress is progress in all of those things. Oh, another thing is like imitation, action imitation. Mm-hmm. Some children may have difficulty, literally, like if you say clap your hands and I'm clapping hands, following directions, touch your nose, finding body parts, like all of those things. So we might not be saying words verbally, but we're seeing improvements in all of those things. And these skills are so important for language development. One thing that's huge and often overlooked is just the ability to imitate. Mm-hmm. Because if you can look at someone and kind of take what they're doing and get your body to do the same thing, we can do that with so much in terms of learning. That means you can learn by just watching.
Yeah.
And that also helps with the imitation of words as well. I mean, I mentioned before that not all people may verbally speak, but those are the things we work on. And so if we're talking about someone who may be non-speaking is what we refer to those individuals, or pre-verbal, so before words come. So we use AAC, the alternative way of communicating that I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. So imitating, like pressing a button, is also huge. That's a sign of progress. And so we look at words oftentimes as like the great indicator of success. But there's so many things before then that we can celebrate that's key and wonderful. And I would say also just the general attention of a child. You'll find that sometimes you might hear a parent say like, oh, he kind of just tends to be in his own world. And so if we're able to kind of just like share worlds for a second, that's huge.
Yeah. You know, moving into now, you know, identifying when you might need to seek help. You know, again, going back to those concepts of milestones and things like that. So, you know, you might start to notice something. And as a parent, you're trying to decide, okay, you know, is my child just a late talker, or is there something, you know, more that I need to investigate? How do you distinguish between a delay that may resolve on its own and one that needs support?
Mm-hmm. I kind of alluded to this earlier. So thanks for the opportunity to kind of expand.
Sure.
The difference is, it has to do with just timing. So when we talk about a late talker, and we, like, for example, we talk about those milestones. So we're hitting those milestones. We just might be hitting them a little bit late. Mm-hmm. So that's what we mean when we say a late talker. When we talk about something else, it's not in the order that we would expect it. And so you might find you're dealing with a child, or you meet a child who might not respond to their name, but they can say their name. They can read, literally read sentences, I'm not joking, but not able to say, like, I want a cookie.
Right.
And so those things are concerning because it's just not happening in the way that we would expect it. Now, again, the concern may not be, it may not be anything, but it's something to look at, to look deeper. And so in terms of a late talker, it tends to speak to a child who has a strong understanding, will use gestures, engaging socially. They may not be saying, like, mama. Well, that's not a good example. They might be saying ball, but they might be babbling. Because another thing is kids babble and they might say mama, 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 but that does not necessarily mean that they mean mama. Mm. Yeah, that's another thing. So there's babbling is also a precursor to verbal language. So we want kids to babble. So if you're saying, like, mama or dada, that does not mean that they're calling mommy or daddy. They might just be babbling. Mm-hmm. But you'll know the difference. They're literally calling you to get your attention.
Right.
And that, honestly, that's a difference in a late talker versus in terms of having concern. Late talkers tend to call parents, tend to learn names, but it's a little bit, but other children may not. And so that might be a little bit more concerning. And it all ties back to that social interaction and communication that we've been talking to. Mm-hmm. But again, concern does not necessarily mean disorder or anything like that, but it invites us to look into what's going on and giving us some answers that we might want to evaluate sooner.
Yeah. So how do you know when you've kind of crossed that threshold from, you know, this seems fairly resolvable because you're seeing signs of, like what you mentioned, and when it gets to the point where people should start considering, you know, that it might be time to see someone like yourself or someone else in a therapeutic space? Like, how do you know when you're moving from, you know, I guess moving into something that you want to pay more attention to?
Mm-hmm. So I would say when it's more than one of those things combined, mm-hmm. right? So I'm sure in terms of, we can take it back to autism. I'm sure you've heard, like, a child on the spectrum might flap their hands and walk on their tippy toes. So not every child who does that has autism. But if I see a child who comes into my office who's two, not saying any words, we're walking on our toes. I won't necessarily say flapping hands, but sometimes some children do sensory seeking behaviors. Mm-hmm. One can be flapping hands. Another one can be kind of like using their voice and like honing a little bit. It can look a little bit different. We have restricted play. We're not engaging with the person next to them. We're not responding to our names. All of that combined would say we need to look at some help. Mm-hmm. But if a child comes into my office and, you know, we're using words and we're playing, but we might walk on our toes, it may not necessarily mean that, you know, something is necessarily wrong. But I would say that I don't diagnose autism.
Mm-hmm.
I have fair knowledge of it. I've had training to assess it, but I don't diagnose it. That will be left to medical doctors and psychologists. Mm-hmm. We do work in teams, so we're all on a team. And so I would make a referral for a child to see someone who can diagnose it, to screen it, to get more information. I can also administer screening tools as well, kind of like parent questionnaires as well, to kind of say, hey, we should look into this more further. But honestly, it ties back to how the child is using language and interacting with their environment is honestly key and the game changer for me as a clinician. You can find that I might have a child who will sit next to me but not engage with me at all until they need something. And if they need something, they will take their hand on my hand and move it. We call that a contact gesture. Mm. That's also very telling as well. Can use words, but would refer to moving my hand to do something. And so that's not typical either. And so that suggests that, you know, we should look into something, look into that a little bit more. And I will say that, and even if you come to me and I say, hey, let's look into this a little bit more, you'll find that some parents go to the doctors and the doctors say, I'm not too sure. We need a little bit more time. So I think some parents are nervous because they're thinking like, oh, I'm coming here and you want me to do this and I'm going to get things that I don't want to deal with right now. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily.
Okay.
I hope you're enjoying this episode of Vital Voices. We're going to take a quick break for some words from our sponsors and we'll be right back.
Have you been searching for healing, but still feeling stuck? Maybe it's stress, fatigue, long COVID symptoms, fibroids, high blood pressure, or perhaps a condition no one can fully explain. At Wellspring Lifestyle Group, we believe healing is body, soul, and spirit, with Christ at the center and practical evidence-based steps you can actually follow. Our approach is grounded in faith, backed by science and fueled by testimony. Start your journey to freedom today with the free Thrive 360 Holistic Wellness Checkup at wellspringlifestylegroup.com. In minutes, you'll get a head start on your journey. Wellspring Lifestyle Group, freedom and transformation through whole person health.
Welcome back to Vital Voices. Let's continue our conversation.
You mentioned that you don't necessarily diagnose it, but you know, when might a delay suggest that something broader may be going on, inclusive of autism as an option?
I would say kind of like a combination of all those things I mentioned. So, if I have a child who has words but not using them, we're not playing with toys in a way that might be expected. I have children who are reading, but not necessarily, again, using words, not expected. That's when I would say we need to look into that more. If I have a two-year-old and older who's not talking, not really babbling, not really engaging with their environment, that's another referral that I would make to kind of look in a little bit further. A lot of the times you'll find that children have fine hearing. And what parents will say, oh, their hearing is fine, because if I play Miss Rachel in another room, they come running. But if I call them, they don't answer. You'll find that, also some children have difficulty with like finding their body parts or completing like the actions to the songs in like nursery rhymes.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, honestly, it kind of goes back to those milestones, though. We don't want to focus on them like we talked about, like the forest and the trees. We don't focus them like just solely in terms of the trees, but we want to look at the child, the whole child as the whole forest in terms of context. Mm-hmm. So,
and a all child, the little trees that are in that forest.
Yes, and all the trees are in the forest. And I use an analogy a lot because sometimes I'll tell parents like, sometimes I'm in the roots. You don't need to be there.
Okay? Like, deep in the weeds.
whole picture. So whole child comes into my office. Mm-hmm. We're two. you know, and the general concern is this child is not communicating. I feel like they should be communicating. Another thing too is you can use environmental checks. Mm-hmm. Not that you should compare your child to siblings or classmates, but it kind of helps, right? So if you find that your child might be the only one. So for example, I had a family come to me recently and the child had like a school function, mm-hmm. and they taught the children like a dance, and that child was the only one unable to participate. Mm. So I'm not saying that like you want to compare, but that gives reason to say, hey, you know, why is she unable to participate? Let's right. look into that a little bit. And when she came to my office, it was a couple of things. One being difficulty following directions, attending, sharing that joint attention. So we had difficulty learning the dance because we also had difficulty identifying body parts. It was more reason to that. But that was kind of like the big moment for the parents saying like, okay, we need to get this checked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I think that's an important question to, you know, what would you say to parents who feel unsure whether they should act now or wait a little bit longer? You say that we have a culture of kind of waiting, but like, what would you say if someone's sitting there and they're looking and like, I'm not sure what's happening with my kid, like it may not be, do I wait? Do I act now? What would you say to that parent?
Mm-hmm. I would say if you're wondering, it's worth checking.
Simple.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
If you're wondering, it's worth checking.
Yeah.
There's a thing that we all have a gut. And sometimes I'm like, man, I should have listened to my gut. Listen to your gut. I've had so many parents tell me like, I knew something was wrong at 6 months. Mm. I just knew something was off. I wasn't connecting with this baby like I did with the other baby. Like I just knew something was off. And I mean, we all do it, not just with our kids. Like, you're like, oh man, I should have checked the car. I should have checked this. I should have checked the faucet. Or should have checked the oven. Like, you know, trust your gut. Early support doesn't harm kids, but waiting can delay progress. And because we can't guarantee what happens in the future, it's worth a check. And even if you schedule a consultation with a speech language pathologist and you're not even ready yet, you'll find that in that conversation, they should give you some tips and some help to kind of move you along the way, even if you don't go along with the whole process. Typically, right. when you come to speech language pathologists, they'll do a consultation with you because, and we have a lot of families who are like, I don't need a consultation. The reason why we do a consultation is not everybody needs to see us. Mm-hmm. So it's more of a screening tool for us to see if you need more help. And if you do need more help, what kind of help do you need? What kind of testing do I need to do when you come to my office? So, you know, schedule that consultation with an SLP and they'll be able to help you further. And then I just wanted to echo, you know, a child's brain is developing and we love to get there when they're young. Between the ages of 1 and 3, before 5 is the sweetest spot.
Mm-hmm.
When we see children who are older, not saying that we can't provide meaningful change, but you're able to really come alongside parents, give them tips and support to help move development along. And the thing about therapy too is, you know, we might see a child an hour a week, maybe 2 hours a week, mm-hmm. but you're with that child a lot more. And so if we're able to give you support and help in terms of what to do at home, so after a therapy session, you're able to talk with parents. We like to give handouts, that kind of thing. You're able to change the environment. It's really, really, really huge for your child. Early guidance can make a significant difference. And so, you know, I would encourage parents to just do it. And I know it can be hard. Like, you know, there's speech therapists. Sometimes we don't want to go to the doctor. Sometimes we don't go to the dentist.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for example, in the case of a dentist, if you think you have a cavity and you wait, it can turn into something else. And so it's just important to act as early as you're wondering. Mm-hmm. You know, it's definitely worth checking.
Fair enough.
I hope you're enjoying this episode of Vital Voices. We're going to take a quick break for some words from our sponsors and we'll be right back.
Have you been searching for healing but still feeling stuck? Maybe it's stress, fatigue, long COVID symptoms, fibroids, high blood pressure, or perhaps a condition no one can fully explain. At Wellspring Lifestyle Group, we believe healing is body, soul, and spirit, with Christ at the center and practical evidence-based steps you can actually follow. Our approach is grounded in faith, backed by science, and fueled by testimony. Start your journey to freedom today with the free Thrive 360 Holistic Wellness Checkup at wellspringlifestylegroup.com. In minutes, you'll get a head start on your journey. Wellspring Lifestyle Group, freedom and transformation through whole person health.
Welcome back to Vital Voices. Let's continue our conversation.
You know, when you think about progress for a child who may be on the autism spectrum or is having communication challenges, what does, you know, progress actually look like?
I would say progress looks like what helps a child thrive in their environment better. So every child, every parent has different things. So if you find that communication is a challenge, providing communication where they're, whether it is through helping that child get to say words or giving them a device where they're able to get their communication needs met. You'll find too that once those communication needs are being met, the behaviors, because sometimes we have kids who have behaviors, and just getting frustrated, and it's not saying anything with the child. Honestly, if you can't get your needs met, like, you will get frustrated.
Yeah.
You might find a reduction in those behaviors as well. And so also looking at school, how the child is doing in school. I would say just looking for a meaningful change in various environments in that child's life.
Okay. And I guess just as we wrap up, you know, what are some, I guess what encouragement or advice would you give to families or caregivers who may feel overwhelmed, afraid, or unsure of what to do next?
That's really, really good. Not to sound so cerebral, but I love Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Okay. And I encourage families, like, sometimes you know that you need to do something, but you have to work. Bills have to be paid. And so I think it's one of those things where you take time to make sure that the house isn't on fire, that the needs are being met, and then you can tackle what you need to tackle. I mean, I know that we need to do what we need to do, but I would say that we don't navigate the world having children thinking that they're not gonna, that they're gonna need help, right? Whatever that help may be, you know, that's not what we seek in life. We don't seek it for ourselves. We don't expect to get sick. We don't expect for any of these things to happen. And so when things happen that kind of change what you're hoping and expecting, it's okay to make sure that the house isn't on fire, that you're okay. But I tell parents, don't stay there for too long. You can also do two things at once. You know, oftentimes they're waitlist in the country with speech therapists anyhow. And so you can make the appointments and then kind of deal with what you got to deal with. You can also reschedule the appointment if you need to. Sometimes, honestly, it's just the first step of getting started. Another encouragement is that, you know, you didn't do anything wrong. A lot of families feel like, oh, if I didn't do this, or what did I do? Sometimes it can be spiritual, thinking like you did something bad, and so this is what you're getting. But, you know, you didn't. We don't have the answers for things. We all have different walks in life. We all have different trials. It looks different for every person. So that's usually what my encouragement is. And that, you know, it's not having a delay or autism or language disorder or anything like that does not mean that your child won't be a beautiful, wonderful member of society. For some, it literally just gives them answers and they're able to navigate the world as normal, get married and stuff like that. For others, that may not be the case. Sometimes it's hard figuring out, you know, what your journey might look like. I also encourage parents to find support. REACH is a nonprofit organization that is a wonderful resource for families, and they have a parent WhatsApp group where they're able to, you know, give tips and help. Like, for example, I had a family member ask for an optometrist that work with kids with special needs, because, you know, that it can be challenging, that like dentists, optometrists, doctors and stuff like that. And so, you know, I was able to ask, and someone was able to ask like in the WhatsApp group for a recommendation. They also have, I don't know if it's weekly. I believe it used to be weekly. I'm sure it still is. Parent meetings where they have different experts come and talk and try to give support. They also provide speech therapy at REACH. And they have a day program on Saturdays for adults. Because, you know, we do have, we mentioned before, a lot of different needs in terms of it being a spectrum. Mm-hmm. And so, and then children age, you know, they get older. And so it's a wonderful day program for adults with autism and related challenges to kind of connect and do fun stuff on the island. And so, yeah, I encourage parents to just get connected, talk to other parents, get referrals. You don't have to do this alone. It takes a village to raise any child. And if your journey is one in terms of having a child with special needs, that is true as well.
Fair enough. I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to come on the show. For someone who is listening and may think, okay, I think I might need to come in and schedule to see you or to see someone from your team, how do they get in contact with you?
Sure. You can honestly Google us, the Keystone Therapy Services, and our number is there. I would cite the number right now. What is it? I think it's 454-6872. I think that's our number. You can also email us at info@keystone-therapy.com. But honestly, if you Google us, everything will come up. You can give us a call and schedule a meeting with us. And we're not full right now, but let's say you're listening and we might be full. If you Google Speech Therapy Bahamas, there are other providers as well. The biggest thing is, you know, to get help. And oftentimes a speech therapist is the first contact person, and they might be able to refer you to other disciplines. So we didn't talk about it, but there's also disciplines like behavior therapy, occupational therapy. And so once you get started and you talk in that consultation, that person or me would be able to kind of give you some support in terms of what to do next. And also piggying back on what you said earlier, sometimes some parents honestly just don't know what to do. And a consultation is a great time to just get some advice or just get some help. Oftentimes when I meet with parents, they are looking for schools that might be good for their child, other therapists like the occupational therapy, the behavior therapy recommendations. And so it can feel really overwhelming and daunting at the outset. But once you get connected with someone in the community, they can come alongside you and help you with that.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you again for taking time out of your busy schedule. This was a great conversation. I think it's going to be very helpful for our listeners. And I double checked while you were saying it. Yes, the phone number is correct. That's what's on the website. So you can reach out to Dr. Moss via Keystone, Keystone Therapy, and find out more information there. So thank you for your time.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It was a great conversation. Thank you.
Dr. Danielle Moss, thank you so much for joining us and helping us to better understand autism, communication, and the importance of looking beyond words when we think about growth and progress. This conversation reminds us that communication is not always one size fits all, that early support matters, and that meaningful progress is about connection, expression, understanding, and helping each child thrive in the way that is right for them. And as always, we thank you to everyone that's listening to Vital Voices. And until next time, we say stay informed, stay connected, stay well, and stay tuned for the next Vital Voice.
Did you miss a part of today's show? You can catch this episode and all Vital Voices episodes online at youtube.com/@Vital Voices 242. See you next week as we sit down with another Vital Voice.
Vital Voices is a production of Tag Studios and is proudly brought to you each week by our sponsor, Wellspring Lifestyle Group, where you can find freedom and transformation through whole person health.
Vital Voices.